it's so funny because as a founder and you're pitching all these awesome things that your device is going to be able to do, all of its capabilities it'll be able to do down the road. It's safe. It works. You want to show that you are groundbreaking, disruptive technology. Meanwhile, I am over here on the FDA side going, okay, who are you most like?
Welcome to the Global Medical Device Podcast, where today's brightest minds in the medical device industry go to get their most useful and actionable insider knowledge direct from some of the world's leading medical device experts and companies.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Global Medical Device Podcast. My name is Etienne Nichols. I'm the host of today's podcast. With me is Christine Luck from Proxima. She is the Associate Regulatory Affairs Manager, and she has an interest. She kind of came to medical devices, I guess, head on. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me today, Etienne. My name is Christine Luck. My background is in, let's see here, my journey started with biochemistry. I thought I would be pre-med. I was not. And so I thought I would take a gap year and do a master's in biomedical engineering. It was not a gap year. and so I did my master's at Rice University in the Global Medical Innovations Program, which is very similar to the name of your podcast. But basically the focus of that program was the design and development of medical devices. And I just fell in love with it. And a big focus of the program was doing things like developing very early stage from concept to prototype and meeting with clinicians and gaining their feedback. And a part of that focus was startups, how to develop business plans, how to really validate that value proposition. And so right out of the gate, I founded a startup in the women's health space. It fizzled kind of immediately, but leading up to that fizzle point, it was a fantastic experience, gained a lot of insights, especially being in the Houston area, you know, with all the energy from the TMC Innovation Space, J-Labs, all that stuff at the Cookie Factory, and formed a great network down there with lots of great people, lots of support in the space. And so from there, I joined a medical device and drug therapeutics studio that basically focused on the commercialization of early stage assets, supporting it through. And so I wore all of the hats in the hat store. I wore the engineering hat. I wore the project manager hat, the business, the sometimes patents and lots of grants, fundraising, all of the above. And so as my regulatory hat was kind of a flimsy little paper origami hat at the time, I needed somebody to help me out. And so that was my first time, you know, working with Proxima. They were part of our grant. And so I worked closely with them from the very early stages for the project I worked on. And from informational meeting through pre-sub and strategies for what our final submissions would be. And so I knew nothing at the time. And so it was great. And so I wanted to share with everybody today kind of what that transition was like and tips and tricks if you are in the same shoes as me of I've never worked with a consultant before. How do I get the most out of this relationship? And now I work at Proxima.
I love that introduction and I love the multivaried background that you gave. And there's so many things that I kind of want to ask questions about, but I still want to go more into your background, if that's okay.
Go for it.
One of the things that especially stood out to me, two things, I guess, the Texas Medical Center for Innovation, TMCI, is that all right?
I think it's TMCI. At the time, they rebranded a bunch. I think they call it the TMC Innovation Factory now.
Okay. Was it an Nabisco factory? I don't remember.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were there earlier this year.
Nabisco Cookie Factory.
Yeah.
Did you see the original signages? They've got, and I think they used to have little Oreo cookie things on the floor to just kind of get that nod to it. If you breathe in real deep, you can still smell Oreo. I'm just kidding. No, you can't.
It was a great space. And man, if I was in the Houston area, I would be there. It was great.
It's, you know, and whenever new startups come to me and ask like, hey, how do I learn more? What are resources I can tap into? I always tell them, sign up for all the newsletters you can. There's so much going on from J-Labs to BioHouston to TMC Innovation, and everybody in these groups are just so great to just talk to. They're very open. If they don't know, they know somebody who they can introduce you to. And so it's fantastic energy, and it's always growing, and it's grown so much just even the last like 4 or 5 years. And another thing, I have to give a shout out to them. I help out with the Southwest Pediatric Device Innovation Consortium, the SWPDC, with Dr. Chester Koh at Texas Children's Hospital. And so it's a FDA-sponsored program to help the development and getting pediatric devices through the FDA. And so got to give a shout out that that's a resource for all of you pediatric device companies listening, you know.
Absolutely. It's close to my heart when I see people doing that, helping pediatrics. So if we zoomed out just a little bit, some people may be saying, well, I don't live in Houston, you know, but you could still apply that because almost anywhere you are, but most metropolitan areas, there's some medical device community that you can get involved in. Mm-hmm. So I definitely recommend that. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of great accelerator programs that are popping up in major cities as well as a lot of virtual opportunities as well. So if you are in a city innovating where there's not as robust of a network, maybe there's something virtual that you can join, especially, you know, in this post work from home COVID era, a lot of these have popped up exponentially in the last couple of years. So if you found yourself to this podcast, you're doing the right thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So one of the other things I wanted to ask about was your failed definition. You said you failed early. What does that mean? What does that look like? And how did you know for sure?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about the med devices, life sciences industry there's so many things that could go wrong in all of the stages from concept through commercialization. But I think what kind of happened with us was, I mean, it was a straight out of a graduate program. We all found our own full-time careers and took different directions. It was just as simple as that. And it happens. And there were probably other technical things that we could have spent some more time on. It could have worked out. But at the time, some of us, or I, at least I in particular, wasn't quite ready to take that risk yet. And many of my co-founders are now off doing incredible founding companies of their own and absolutely killing it. So,
yeah. General Magic from Houston, Texas. I don't know if you've heard of General Magic or not. The little group. Oh, I don't remember why this came up in my mind today, but just the group of people who got together before the iPhone, before the iPod. But these are the people who invented all these different things. It was the most important company in Silicon Valley that nobody's ever heard of. But anyway, they failed. Everybody went their different directions. One guy started Android, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Oh, wow.
General Magic. It's an interesting story, but we'll in 10 years, we'll be looking back at yours. What was the name of your startup?
Lily Spec. So you might have heard Joanna Nathan, Caitlin Cherry. They've got Pranatharactic, Coda Health now. So yeah. Oh yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Anyway, that's not what you wanted to talk about. So thank you for indulging me and going down that pathway.
Anytime.
So working with the consultant. So let's pretend you're at a certain point in the company, and I'll let you decide at what point you want to be in the company, whether you own the company, whether you're just working with as product developer, or where do you want to be in the company, and who do you think this story might pertain the most to? And then how do you work with a consultant that you worked with and to get the most out of it?
Depending on how you want to structure your company, you know, you could have all this in-house, you can hire in the expertise, or if you want to keep your team lean and just have consultants for different subject matter expert areas, you can certainly do that.
Well, let's talk about your criteria for deciding that. How did you determine what you're going to keep in-house, what you were going to outsource? What was some of the criteria you went through?
Yeah, well, it's kind of weird because the structure of the company that I was at, we had our core team. And then for each project, if we needed, we had partners in different spaces. Like, for example, we were partnered with Texas Children's and Texas A&M for engineering and clinical. And so we wanted to keep that kind of that central point of contact project manager as our in-house, as sort of like the business expert, the CEO, but shared across different keep people within the company sort of thing. And then as we grew, then eventually would spin out into its own standalone company. But at the time, you know, very early stage, and like I said earlier, med devices, startups, very, very risky. Mm-hmm. And so you wanted to de-risk as much as you could in the very beginning, instead of putting all of your eggs in a basket. At least that was the model that we took. So that was kind of our rationale behind that. We had grant funding to support it, and that way we could just go deliverable and by deliverable at a time to see what we really need in the future. Because if you build all this out and you have to pivot, you know, then you got to change a lot of things around.
I'm sure you had a lot of different consultants then that you were working with. Was it difficult to juggle those or, and maybe one of the things that I think about from a medical device perspective is I've got to make sure that whatever they're doing is quality driven. And so that might've been one of the difficulties. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but how were you able to juggle those different things? And what recommendations do you have for, you know, companies to get the best relationship?
Yeah. And yeah, especially as you start getting somebody for regulatory reimbursement, quality, subject matters, and also like groups to run your biocomp testing or animal studies, you know, the list grows really, really fast. And so it was definitely a big learning experience for me, juggling all of the ringmaster of the circus, so to say, making sure everybody is aligned. Who do I invite to every meeting? What is everybody doing? And what happens if there are conflicts between consultants with different opinions? How do you resolve that? And how do you keep things under control in one meeting where these discussions are happening? Because, you know, it's time and materials based. And so every meeting is money. And that was something that I learned pretty fast and something that I think everybody who starts working with consultants should be cognizant of. And that's why it's extra important. How do I get the most and how do I get the most out of these very knowledgeable people that I enlist?
Yeah. If we take a specific example, one of the things that I think about that people probably aren't very familiar with is the actual interaction with the FDA. What would you say are some things you wish you would have known, you know, before they approached the FDA on your behalf, or were you with them? What did that look like?
Yeah. Oh, man. So I interacted with the FDA twice. I did an informational meeting and I did a pre-submission meeting. Proxima took the lead on both, but I still was like part of the team that presented, responded to questions, things like that. And so it was a lot of preparation and learning of the lingo but less so lingo, more so just being comfortable and making sure everyone who is talking was like on the same page of what you wanted to present and what you weren't ready to present yet, because it would be, you know, bound into your file and written in permanent marker on your record, you know, things like that. And the most like appropriate way to structure a question was a big one for me, because the FDA's, you know, it's better to do a yes or no sort of thing. Does the FDA concur versus a open-ended question? And then suddenly you do like a 2 billion people clinical trial and you don't want to do that. So, yeah. So it was a lot of strategy that I wasn't aware of first off. And that's probably how I fell in love with doing regulatory work and why I'm at Proxima now, is because of that strategy of how to best approach showing your device to the FDA. What's the best pathway to take? And there's so many nuances that, and I get a lot of companies, especially whenever they talk to me through the SWPDC, of like, there's a lot going on here. How do I start? What are resources that I could go to at least like get a crash course of what's a 510K? What is a de novo? What's a PMA? What am I? I don't. And then the existential spiraling crisis. And so I love that like so many people are putting out these resources of how, because I learned these in my master's program as a PowerPoint in one lecture. And then throughout my career, it just kind of grew and grew as a knowledge base, you know.
Are there any things that you really wish you had known a little bit more, even from your master's program? I mean, it, just one course might, you know, it depends on how much you absorb, if you're a sponge versus not being a sponge. But are there any things you really wish you'd known before embarking on that journey from a quality regulatory perspective?
I wish I knew a little bit more about, and I'm not just saying this because Greenlight Guru is a QMS system, but I wish I knew more about the QMS system and how to actually use it, you know? Like I got an idea of what the design history file looks like. But what about things like the quality manual and needing to vet your vendors? Didn't know I needed to do that. But also like how to juggle that, oh, I'm doing R&D and I don't know if I want to start doing my risk and what am I ready for this? Do I need to like cart before the horse, you know, write down all of my design inputs because I already have a working prototype or like vice versa and it's slowing me down and kind of figuring out how that fits in to a real working.
Yeah.
You know.
So at what point did you start doing design controls or did you make it to that point?
So we started doing design controls for one of my projects, but we already had like a functioning prototype. It just wasn't quite ready for like animal studies. So basically when we were starting to design freeze, like when we were starting to reach our design freeze and really iterating, and we have like the general gist of it that we knew what we were developing our risk assessment for. It wasn't just like an idea in a cloud, but we had like a tangible prototype. And then we needed to fine tune it is when we started really digging deep. And, you know, it was a constant iteration of, oh, we need to add more details. But this is what we've learned, what we learned in our usability, what we learned in our bench, in our cadavers, stuff like that. And so I think what's really important when you start off a relationship with a client, even before you hire them in, as you start vetting different consultants and getting different proposals, like reflect, take a step back and realize, what is it that I'm looking for first off? Because things should be kind of deliverable focused instead of a general thing. You know, what's your first goal that you're going to have together? What do you have any time constraints? What do you have right now? Do you have a design freeze? Are you ready for this? Or do you just have a concept and your regulatory pathway is going to define or at least guide how many bells and whistles you're going to put into your prototype, basically.
Yeah.
And so getting that figured out, because then you're going to have to present that idea to the consultant and the consultant's going to be like, what are you explaining to me? I want to make sure I get a grasp on it before I build a proposal for you. Because otherwise I don't want to build something that's not going to be accurate to what you really need. So getting a firm understanding of that. And then whenever you're ready to start, like, what does the consultant need from me? I keep saying me and I interchangeable. I'll try to make this clearer.
No, it's good.
So what would the, I'll say, okay, me as a client, what would the consultant need from me to best understand the device? What sort of documentation, what level of detail? Is it design inputs? Is it just general specifications, user needs, or published documentation that shows how this works? And so that's going to be something that both the client and the consultant are going to want to discuss on, is what level of detail and also what level of communication is going to be had during the drafting of that deliverable. Is there going to be is there going to be meetings in the middle? Is there going to be rapid back and forth of emails? What level of communication we're going to have? Or am I just going to hand you a package and you're going to ghost me for a couple of weeks and then you're going to come back with something that's totally wrong? So I think that partnership of open line of communication is super important. And especially, you know, and especially if you're in this early stages, you're moving rapidly. Things are changing all the time.
Yeah.
That being said, being on the consultant side now, please version history and date your designs. I really appreciate it because that way I won't integrate something that's in an old version of a drawing that's no longer the case. And so we can have the most accurate snapshot of your technology.
Yeah, that's incredibly important. Absolutely.
Doesn't have to be super formal, but at minimum, a date and version of some sort.
Right.
Awesome. Love it.
Yeah.
Also getting an idea of not just the current deliverable, but kind of what's your roadmap? What's coming up next? How much might that cost? What will you need? What will I need to be ready for that stage? And so kind of that high level overview of like, what are we working towards? What's the overall goal? And then what's the upcoming goal? So that alignment's really important for that partnership.
That makes sense. And there's a couple different perspectives I can see a company or a company leader looking at this through. So you might be thinking, okay, I need to know where my company is. What is my quality management system set up? Or am I working towards ISO 13485 certification? Whatever the case may be. or am I just working for towards a submission? Maybe I already have those other things done. Just depending on who you're working with and what you're working towards, it makes sense.
Do you have other indications that you want to add in the future that if we find anything relevant, we can put that in our pocket for later? Or if we want to start with a broader scope, if we want to start with a narrower scope, if you wanted to start pediatric and go to full adult in the future, you know, future plans, what are things that, but then also being clear, what is your first FDA submission going to include? Is that going to be all the way to the end of the scope, or is it just going to be the minimum viable intended use, so to say?
Crawl, walk, run. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now that you are on the other side,
crawl, walk, run to market first.
Yeah. Right. One of my favorite questions to ask is, do you have a favorite failure story? Can you look back and say, man, you know, I really messed it up with this vendor or whatever, you know, this client relationship?
Let me think. Because yes.
Change the names to protect the guilty. And you could be as vague
me,
as you
I'm guilty.
Be, just no. change the facts if you like. No, it's all good. But yeah, just a general idea, just to present the gist would be great if possible. But
yeah, no, I mean, I think one of my biggest fails that I want to learn from is handling, like you mentioned earlier, you have all of these different consultants, making sure they're all on the same page and making sure the budget is being cared for and understanding what all of your payment cycles are and keeping an eye on what everyone's working on, what everyone will work on, and how that runway looks for the next couple of months, next couple of weeks, especially if you're working on a constrained budget like a grant or some sort of award from an accelerator or something. Just paying extra close attention to that. And that's something that I also really value with any partnership is transparency from both parties of, hey, we're running low on money, or hey, you're getting close to your what was proposed in the scope of work. Do we need an amendment? What are things being spent on? Stuff like that, you know, from a more of a project management client management standpoint. That's a communication from both parties. And so that's very critical to any, especially if you're early stage startup that's bootstrapped for money.
Yeah. So are there ways or tactics you can suggest to have a smoother conversation when that comes up? Because I know a lot of people, they start talking about they're not getting it done and they need to get done. You wait until you get to a certain threshold and emotionally, you now may be emotionally charged when you have that conversation, or maybe not. I don't know. Did you experience anything like that? And are there any tips you have in really facilitating that conversation?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Conversation is key. I think both parties, client and consultant, should not be afraid to nudge. If you're missing something or if you need something from me, don't wait. Nudge. Because the longer you wait, the more assumptions are made, or, you know, your timelines get pushed back for, you know, FDA submissions take a while for the FDA to review. And then that pushes your pre-sub, and then that pushes your minutes, and then that'll push blah, blah, blah. And then you can't start your testing into, you know, it snowballs. And so communication early, often, don't be afraid to bother. It's fine. It's not like I'm getting a Teams message ping every 10 seconds, it's an email and I will respond. And, you know, I think it's important for clients to realize and consultants to realize that the goal is the same for both parties. We want to get a successful, safe, and effective device or therapeutic or combination or IVD through the market, through the FDA in an efficient manner with a strategy that makes sense. So just the goal is the same. And so we will drive at the same level of energy.
Yeah. So as a founder, were you ever presented with the option to use equity to pay for some of these services? Or did that ever come up in a situation? I'm always curious about that.
Yeah. For the program or for the projects that I worked on, the startups that I worked on, we focused on non-dilutive funding. So I didn't utilize equity at the time. So I don't have a good answer for that.
Okay. No worries. No, that sounds good. Okay. What other piece of advice do you have for companies who are facing this just overwhelming requirements, you know, that whether they're used to it or not? What other pieces of advice do you have for companies who are starting to utilize consultants?
When you're doing your early stage vetting, I love a good spreadsheet that lists every category you need and what make sure that whoever you're vetting has that level of experience specific to the product that you're working on. Let's see. Yeah, and that way you can also use that spreadsheet to help track what level of what stage you're at with them, or if they've sent you a proposal yet, if you need a ping again. Just kind of having those all those lined up in one place was really helpful for me. Who my point of contact is, when does my contract need to be updated, things like that, you know, kind of from a more administrative / management standpoint. I think that was really helpful because it gets really overwhelming when there's just so many different things that you need, and you, especially if you need to present it to the rest of your team, just to have those as an easy comparison is nice.
Yeah. So I'm curious more about that spreadsheet. I wonder if you can go into more detail about, and I'm assuming we're taking this from the person who is getting a consultant. They're building out a spreadsheet of their needs that they want to receive from the consultant. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Like what are the questions that you need answered? What are the gaps that you need to fill by a consultant? So like if you need a contract manufacturer to build out this component, what kind of machining do they need to do? What are materials? What are their expertise? And are they compliant with XXX standards, you know?
Okay. So if we were to talk about that specifically from a regulatory standpoint, what are some things you typically see? And I'm sure you probably get this type of list from people before, and then you go down the road working with them for a little bit and you realize, man, I wish they'd had this, this, and this, but they didn't include it because they didn't even know that they needed that. Oh. Anything come to mind like that?
Yeah. Like if something pivots and suddenly you have a new magical material that you...
Yeah, if something pivots, or, you know, a lot of times we're going to use the I like you were. Again. I'm going to go down the same road. Let's say I, as a medical device company, I put together what I believe is a comprehensive list of needs for this consultant. And then 2 or 3 months go by and that list of needs has doubled. Nothing's really changed. It's just that I've realized so much more.
Yeah. And I don't know until you know.
Yeah. Are there common things that people leave out or is it just case by case? I mean, it could be either one. I don't know. If I'm relatively new to the medical device industry, I might not think about IQOQ PQs for machines for a CMO.
Yeah.
From a regulatory standpoint, I might not be thinking about certain aspects of reimbursement, maybe.
Ooh, and especially if you dive into clinical, there's a lot of stuff you don't think about as well starting off. Like I'm thinking about, because I wrote a lot of grants in the past, like what were things that I didn't think about until I walked through the steps of my Gantt chart. And then as I built out this Gantt chart of, okay, well, now we're in this step, my device now has such and such components that I didn't think about. I need a QMS system, or I need to.
And that's a good point. You actually went to a place, you had the grant filled out, and that probably revealed, that unearthed some things, I'm guessing. Probably.
Oh, yeah. I wrote the grant. So
Okay, that makes sense. Well, where I was going to is like something like eStar, you know, where you look through and you're going to fill this out. So, you know, there's probably all of these different needs. Different things like that are always helpful to me, I think, to think about what could unearth some unknown need.
Definitely like getting an idea of what standards and guidances your device might comply with. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'm starting to think about it now, like, if I'm going to have to seek out a different lab separate from what I already have on hand to do this particular thing, or if that's covered by this wheelhouse, or if I could overlap this with another study going on, will I need sterilization? What will that look like? Can my current contract manufacturer connect me with somebody?
Yeah. Can it be gamma or ETO and all these different things? You just go down the rabbit hole. That's probably a good question, maybe. And you tell me what you think, but seems like that would be a good question in that conversation early on with your regulatory consultant. Tell me my unknowns. Evaluate me and you tell me what I don't know. You know, if there's any way to give me a gap analysis on my own thinking about my device. Is that accurate or a fair statement?
Yeah. Like as the client, I'm the expert in what I have so far. I'm the expert in the value prop. I'm the expert in how the device works and what goes into it. But for the next steps after that, it's if I give that to you, what will I need to do for the FDA? What will the FDA want to see to prove that it's a safe and effective device based on this my baby that I have spent so many years developing?
Yeah.
And I just so desperately want to get to market.
What about personality differences? Because I could see that being something that would play into this partnership or this relationship between a client and a regulatory consultant. And I'll give you an example of what I'm thinking is if I care so much and I believe in my product, I've pitched it to so many people, you know, it's going to work and it is this and it's safe and it's effective and it's and so forth. I'm going to have a regulatory consultant who can, you know, say, hammer me home and say, no, you got to do these different tests because it's not truly safe until we know this is safe. You know, or what are your thoughts?
Oh, side tangent. That's something I wish I knew as a client. What am I allowed to put on my website? I can't say I'm FDA approved if I'm not. That's not allowed. What's some verbiage that I can or cannot put on my website legally? That's a big thing. Yeah. And I sometimes see these on people's websites. I'm like, oh, you can't have that there.
Marketing and labeling. Like, absolutely.
Marketing and labeling is a big one that, you know, as a startup, you don't learn these things out of thin air. You learn by, unfortunately, learning the hard way. Hopefully not, but it happens. Back to your question. It's, you know, it's so funny because as a founder and you're pitching all these awesome things that your device is going to be able to do, all of its capabilities it'll be able to do down the road. It's safe. It works. And it's funny because like you want to show that you are groundbreaking, pivotal, disruptive. That's the term. That's disruptive. The buzzword. Disruptive technology. Meanwhile, I am over here on the FDA side going, okay, who are you most like? Because that would be a 510K predicate. That would be, then we could leverage their testing. But you know, that thankfully now there's the de novo pathway that you can kind of have that. You don't have the full burden of a PMA, but you still have that novelty and that edge on your competition, you know, of being the first to market in that space, but still like being able to leverage testing designs at least by other groups and be like, it's kind of like this. And it's kind of like this too.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just kind of those two different hats of, no, I don't want to change it. Or I, you know, like if it's justifiable, you've got buy-in from your end users. You know, I think that's one of the most important things, and especially in early stages and throughout the design process, is getting that buy-in from your end users, from your buyers, your who's going to use it, who's going to buy it, who's going to pay for it.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
What do they want? And if that's justifiable.
That's a really good point that you bring up too about the, I think I'm novel and maybe I haven't done a whole lot of competitive research, but I'm certain that I'm the only one out there when in reality, maybe I have a predicate and that could get me to market faster. And the regulatory consultant, you know, they're going to expect some legit market and competitive analysis so that they can actually make that comparison. That makes sense.
That is a strategy you could take. You can get clearance for, so that you can at least like show that this part of the device is safe, and then adding on new features that might affect the safety later on, but at least you have your base device that you could start marketing.
Yeah.
That is a strategy you can do.
That's a good conversation to have though. Those are interesting things. That's, you know, I want it to do any and everything, but like you said, maybe we can get to market faster if we just.
Yeah. Do you want to do this as a tier? Or do you want to do this all in one? You know, it's a choice that you have to make as a founder, and maybe your advisors can help guide you with that as well.
Very cool.
What your investors want.
Yeah. Any other things that we're missing or that you wanted to cover or thought about with this relationship? Or it's really interesting talking. I'm sure, you know, it's funny. We talk about, I was in this program. I founded this company. I failed. I did this. And between every one of those sentences, there's a whole lot of stories, I'm sure. And I don't know if you had any additional ones you wanted to tell, but that's me buying you some time here. I'll tell you one that I experienced one time. So as a project manager, I didn't really give you a lot of my detail, but I was working with one distributor or one, not distributor, manufacturer. I was trying to get a component in. And I found out that there was an issue. Their tolerance was not measured the same that we were measuring our tolerances. And so there was a big problem there. Well, I didn't realize it was going to be a 6-month process to get things changed and updated. So my timelines were extended way beyond what I thought. So one of the things that I think I would have done differently if I could go back is to have a better relationship to understand what their process was in updating the way they inspected that product versus the way we inspect it or whatever.
All right. Anything? I've got one for you.
Okay.
This was actually with Proxima. If I were to go back and, you know, I talk so much about making sure you know what your goals are. And that's because when I started hiring Proxima as a consultant, I didn't know what I wanted. I just assumed that, okay, I got to check a box. We got to get regulatory consulting going. Don't know what this entails, but we're going to do it. Didn't know what was expected of me, what information I needed to provide to paint a full picture. We might have been too early even, just because we didn't have like those specific design inputs of what kind of like how long did this device last for in the body? How was this deployed? And there were still a lot of like prototype changes that needed to happen. And also really getting an idea of what our patient population was. Those things that you want to make sure you have a story, you know, at least before you go in, or at least different ways that it could go mapped out clearly. Because that could impact your regulatory strategy up front. That's like I've flirted with 510K to know if I even looked down the HDE pathway with this and if it was qualifiable or not. And so I think a lot of time, money could have been saved up front if not only had we had a clearer pathway of kind of what our goals and timeline was, what we wanted to, if I could have a better idea of what we wanted to get out of the FDA, like what questions did we want answered in like the informational meeting for clarifying for our next steps. Now, granted, in an informational meeting, the FDA's responses to your question are kind of like not as like they're not tied to those answers, but at least it serves some guidance. But I wish that also, as we went through, I wish I had logged those carefully of why we made those decisions. Because then later on, a year down the road, we'd look back of, oh, why didn't we check this out? No. This is what we decided on at the time. So I wish I kept a log of why we made those decisions.
Yeah, that makes sense. That is something that we probably all struggle with a little bit. Every company I've ever worked at, how we got to where we are is a difficult story to tell. And so that's really good to be cognizant of that early.
Because otherwise you're going to have a little deja vu moment of, did we talk about this before?
Why? Yeah.
Oh, let's look at this again. No, let's look at this again. Oh, hey, it's back, you know.
And if the company goes long enough, the guy who made that decision and actually knows might have left. So
That's why documentation is so valuable. Good note-taking, good project handoff. That's a lesson that I learned right there.
Making absolutely
sure that's all clear. Oh my goodness, yes.
It's exciting to hear your story and how excited you are to hear, even to talk about it. When even you use the word failure, it's still, you learned so much. And it's probably, you know, it's funny how we think they're setbacks, but sometimes they're just setups for comebacks. So I'm excited for where your future may take you.
Yeah. I mean, when you have to fail in med devices, because as you fail, you uncover new things that you should have found out about. If you pretend like you're succeeding and you're sugarcoating, something could seriously go wrong. Someone could seriously get hurt.
Yeah.
So it's so important to be brutally honest and just be real that so much can go wrong and it'll be okay. There's things you can do. There's resources you can call upon.
Yeah. Where can people find you to reach out more to talk more about this if they're interested in doing so?
Yep. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, just Christine Luck. I'm on there. Or you can email me at my Proxima email, christine.luck@proximacro.com. Thanks for listening to me ramble. Thanks for listening to me at 2x speed. I see you. Don't worry. This is for you. No, I was kidding.
Very cool. Yeah. And we'll include the links in the show notes to her email and so forth so that you can easily get a hold of her. Mm-hmm. But very cool. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a blast. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you all next time. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, can I ask a special favor from you? Can you leave us a review on iTunes? I know most of us have never done that before, but if you're listening on the phone, look at the iTunes app, scroll down to the bottom where it says leave a review. It's actually really easy. Same thing with the computer. Just look for that leave a review button. This helps others find us and it lets us know how we're doing. Also, I'd personally love to hear from you on LinkedIn. Reach out to me. I read and respond to every message because hearing your feedback is the only way I'm going to get better. Thanks again for listening and we'll see you next time.